Behind the Arc. A look around the country in college basketball. Behind the Arc. Hear about the week's biggest storylines, from blue bloods to mid-majors. Go in depth on the week's biggest matchups, bracketology, and which small conference schools should be on your radar. Behind the Arc. Here's your host, Joel Silverberg.
Welcome to the Behind the Arc podcast. My name is Joel Silverberg. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to Behind the Arc, whether it's on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, 99.1, thesportsanimal.com, or on the Sports Radio WNML app. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen. It was great to get back to it last week after 3 months off, and I'm happy to be back this week as well. A lot of news in the SEC. We're still waiting on a final decision from Eve Pons. His deadline is approaching quickly. Is he going to go to the NBA draft or is he going to return to college? That'll be found out by this time next week. Also, elsewhere in the SEC, two schools found out they were getting key contributors back out of the NBA draft and players will be returning to college. What does that do for the competitiveness of the SEC? And a school out west is having some big recruiting success and got a major recruit earlier in the week. What does that mean out west for a program that's been trying to get back to prominence for quite some time after having a first-year head coach this past season? All that and more coming up on the Behind the Arc podcast. We start out with Eve Pons, who was announced last week that he had made the list of finalists for the NBA Combine. It was narrowed down to a list of 105 players that's supposed to be trimmed down to about 60 or 70 to see who will get an NBA Combine invite. Now, the rule is that players have until August 3rd or the NBA Combine to decide whether or not they want to return to school, whichever one comes first. And the NBA Combine for the upcoming year still hasn't been totally finalized as of now, which likely means players will have to make a decision by August 3rd, which is why you're hearing some of these other SEC players make their decisions this week. We'll get more into those a little bit later on in the podcast, but we're still waiting to hear from Eve Pons. And the assumption right now for a lot of way too early top 25 polls, Gary Parrish of CBS Sports and other outlets like that, are ranking Tennessee very highly as a top 15, usually seeing Tennessee around the 10, 11, or 12 range, based on the idea that Pons is going back to college. Now, Rob Lewis of VolQuest.com reported earlier this week that Eve Pons had received an invitation to be one of the final 60 candidates to participate in the NBA Combine, which means Pons has to make a decision by Monday, August 3rd, whether or not he's going to come back to Knoxville. And so it's difficult to tell at this point what Pons is going to do. We haven't had much insight into the situation. Now, one source who claims to have knowledge of the situation told me earlier this week that he is hearing that Pons is not going to come back to Tennessee. But all of that is still up in the air. And that's a possibility. There's been conversations about, is the language barrier a problem? Is Pons tired of being a student? We kind of saw that with Jordan Bone the year before, where he had three good seasons, might have been told that he can't really raise his draft stock much higher, and decided that he was done playing free basketball. And that is what I was told is the situation with Pons, that he has been told that he's pretty much a second-round guy, whether he goes this year or next year, and can't really raise his stock. I don't know if I agree with that. I feel like Pons can definitely raise his stock if he continues to develop his offense. You saw him work on that mid-range game a little bit over the course of this past season. If he could become a more lethal outside shooter, now that's a big if. That's a tall ask for somebody that's so great defensively to suddenly have to add into his repertoire after 3 years in a college basketball program. But that would be one thing that would help his projection skyrocket if he could develop as an outside shooter. And that was actually the scouting report when Pons first committed to Tennessee. He was a three-star recruit, and the big question was, he's got all the athleticism, he can do a lot of really good things in the basketball court, but if he really wants to improve his NBA draft stock, he'll need to develop an outside shot. And we've seen a little bit of that through the course of his first three seasons, especially this last year while he was a junior, but the big story around Pons was his athleticism, his versatility on defense, and how well he can defend the one through the five. So looking at that outside game, is he a fairly reliable outside shooter? Yes, but is he an offensive weapon? I wouldn't say that. Rob Doster of NBC Sports joined me on the podcast a few months ago, and he loves Eve Pons. He loves what he can do defensively, and he's described him as a weapon, but he's described him as a defensive weapon. And he had Pons as an early second-round pick earlier around March, right before everything kind of broke off and shut down for the coronavirus. But he also really just has Ponce ranked there as a result of how much he likes Ponce and sees the upside there. But he doesn't really believe that Ponce is going to be an early second round draft pick. He still sees Ponce as a late draft pick to an undrafted player. And that would obviously indicate that, that could have a big indication whether or not Ponce will come back. Now, if he's being told by NBA teams and trying to figure out as much through the process as he can that, hey, we don't believe that there's anything that you could do to really raise your stock, Ponce might decide, okay, well, I'm going to go to the NBA draft, and if I'm not drafted, then I'm going to go back overseas and go home to France, and I'm going to play there. So that's kind of what's up in the air for Ponce at this point in time. I do believe there's a possibility that Ponce could raise his draft stock. I do think it'll be difficult, but when you look at the class this year, it's a very deep class. You have more and more players opting to stay in, especially with the uncertainty of a college basketball season. Now, the NCAA is very adamant, as well as the Power Five brokers in college basketball that be. Everybody is adamant that they are going to have a NCAA basketball tournament in 2021, which means we're going to have something resembling a season this upcoming winter, hopefully. A bunch of conferences have already said we're not playing in the fall, so how early can we really start a college basketball season? That remains to be seen. But for the SEC and for Tennessee, there's a lot of high expectations, especially with Joe Lunardi's bracketology, as we'll get into this later, but seven SEC teams in his field, and you got some other teams that are pretty talented that are going to be knocking on the door to get into the field also. So Ponce coming back to Tennessee is a big indication of where Tennessee can really be this upcoming season. And the backcourt is going to be loaded because you have Josiah Jordan-James and Santiago Viscovi coming back. You also take a look at incoming talents like Jaden Springer and Keon Johnson. And then you consider that Victor Bailey Jr. is finally eligible. Well, Tennessee's backcourt has a lot of options, and it's going to have a lot of talent and a lot of depth. Now, the front court, that's where Tennessee struggled last year because you got a lot of great production with John Fulkerson and Eve Ponce. But beyond that, Tennessee really struggled to establish depth. Juroš Plavšić was a defensive liability. Drew Pember was hurt at times. And Zach Kent transferred early on in the season, left the Tennessee basketball program. So for Tennessee, it's going to be figuring out if Ponce doesn't come back, who is going to step up and not just be a role player, but take on a major responsibility. EJ Anasicki is the grad transfer from Sacred Heart. We had Anthony Latina, Sacred Heart's head basketball coach, on earlier this year. And you can go back and see that interview on the Behind the Arc podcast archive. But obviously, there are a lot of really good things happening with Tennessee in terms of depth. But is there another guy that would currently be pinned as a bench player that can make a big leap and become an impact player in the front court if Eve Ponce opts not to go back to Tennessee this year? And again, these are all just hypotheticals. These are all just questions because as of right now, it's Thursday morning, we haven't heard a formal decision on what Ponce is going to do. And again, he has until Monday, August 3rd to decide whether or not he's going to return to Knoxville for his senior season of college basketball. What else is happening in the SEC? Two schools found out some pretty good news this week. Could that mean more teams in the NCAA tournament for the SEC? Joe Lunardi has seven. What else could happen if the SEC continues to stay deep and more players decide to return to college for the upcoming season? All of that and more coming up on the Behind the Arc podcast. I appreciate you checking out the Behind the Arc podcast. So Joe Lunardi had seven SEC teams in his way too early bracketology 2 weeks ago, and he had those same seven SEC teams in his way too early bracketology that he just dropped on Wednesday. Tennessee and Kentucky are still the highest SEC teams. They're both number four seeds. Florida remains as a number six seed. Arkansas, LSU, and Ole Miss are all number eight seeds, with Ole Miss jumping up to a number eight seed, and Alabama has dropped down to a number nine seed. So a little bit of movement, nothing too crazy, but still seeing those seven SEC teams in the NCAA tournament bracketology that Joe Lunardi is putting out throughout the course of the offseason. The Big Ten has nine teams, the ACC has eight teams, the Big 12 with six teams, and the Pac-12 and the Big East both with five teams. Other multi-bid leagues include two out of the American and two out of the Atlantic 10. Also, none of those seven SEC teams are on the bubble. They're all safely in the tournament field, according to ESPN's Joe Lunardi. Now, two teams outside of those seven in the SEC found out some really good news earlier this week. Former Tennessee coach Konzo Martin over at Missouri found out that three of his basketball players, Xavier Pinson, Mitchell Smith, and Jeremiah Tillman, all withdrew from the 2020 NBA draft. They will return to the Tigers for the upcoming season. Pinson started 31 games as a sophomore last year. He averaged 11 points while shooting 40% from the field. Mitchell Smith will be a fifth-year senior. He's a 6'10 guy that averaged 5 points and five rebounds last year. And then Tillman will also be a senior. He averaged nearly 9 points and five rebounds throughout the course of his career. And he's another 6'10 guy who was a top 50 recruit back in 2017. Now, he's got an issue with foul trouble, but again, that's some familiarity that's coming back to the roster. Konzo Martin is going to have 11 players on his roster who are juniors and seniors. That's the most in the SEC. It's the third most among all Power 5 programs. And the only true freshman on the roster is a 7'2 center named Jordan Wilmore. So Missouri could have an opportunity because of how much depth it has coming back and experience to improve from the 15-16 record that it had last season. Missouri's had some bad luck with key players getting injured. We saw that with both of the Porter brothers in recent years. And it's unfortunate because Martin has now had two losing seasons in a row in Columbia, Missouri, after making it to the tournament his first year there, and did that without Michael Porter Jr. being there because he got injured so early in the season and then came back late. But for Missouri, this is really good news, and you're talking about a coach that could be in some trouble if Missouri struggles again, and it's a league that started to show last season that it could become very, very competitive, and it's going to be hard to break into when, while yes, last year it showed that it was competitive and that it had some depth in terms of teams that were worthy of being in the tournament. I don't know how many teams in the SEC really looked like they were capable of going on a monster run in the tournament, but with Tennessee set to rebound and with Alabama and Arkansas suddenly starting to show some progression and Ole Miss appearing ready for a bounce back year, I see a lot of outlets are very high on Ole Miss despite how much they struggled last season. They're losing Breann Tyree, but the recruiting would suggest that the Rebels are going to be a tournament team this upcoming year. Florida, while it was easily the biggest disappointment in college basketball last season, should be expected to still be a tournament team in the upcoming year. And then you've got LSU, which continues to have talent, just didn't necessarily produce at as high of a level as you would have expected at certain points during the course of the year. Still obviously a tournament team last season. So you're seeing tournament teams. I don't know how many championship caliber teams you're seeing in the league, but that still makes it difficult for teams that weren't even tournament caliber last year to suddenly break into that fold. And that's where it becomes difficult for Missouri to potentially break through the threshold, but having 11 upperclassmen players is certainly going to help. Elsewhere in the SEC, South Carolina's top scorer and rebounder, A.J. Lawson, has announced he's coming back for his junior year. He withdrew his name from the NBA draft on Wednesday. He's a 6'6 guard, started every game for South Carolina last year, and led the team with 13.5 points and nearly four rebounds. And it kind of shows the struggle for South Carolina on the glass when you've got a guard essentially having to lead the team in rebounds. And then Mike Kotsar is not going to be back next year. So who's going to anchor your front court? It's been difficult for South Carolina, especially since Chris Silva left. Now, Frank Martin had that team playing well at times last season, and it looked like they were going to be capable of potentially going on a big run to make the NCAA tournament, and got themselves on the bubble and then blew some chances down the stretch, especially in the non-conference schedule where you just had some really unfortunate losses like to Stetson and things like that happening. So there was a lack of consistency, but Frank Martin's team, you know, it's going to be well coached. You know, he's going to have some talent. It's just a matter of, can he get those guys to consistently play? And so it's going to be interesting to see how South Carolina and Missouri can both move forward. And also, South Carolina found out that former Missouri State freshman Ford Cooper Jr. was transferring to South Carolina. So adding a little bit more depth and having some more players to kind of work with. But it's been very important for South Carolina that A.J. Lawson produces. And he was big at times during some of South Carolina's best wins of last season. Now it's just a matter of putting it all together and being more consistent. And for Missouri, it's having all those guys that have played together now for a couple of years and finally improving and putting a better product on the court. That's the challenge for both Frank Martin at South Carolina and Konzo Martin over at Missouri. A school out west making big strides in recruiting. What could that mean for on-court success? We'll talk about that next to wrap up the show. It's the Behind the Arc podcast on the Esports Animal. Last season, Mick Cronin left Cincinnati and took the job at UCLA, and it was a very rough start for Cronin in his first year over in Westwood. The Bruins suffered non-conference losses to Hofstra, North Carolina, which normally would be acceptable. Last year, that was actually a really bad loss, and Cal State Fullerton, and then suffered a bad conference loss to Washington State early on in Pac-12 play. And after a three-game skid, eventually the Bruins started to get things going. They scored two wins over Arizona, two wins over Colorado, managed to beat Arizona State at home, and suddenly, after stringing a bunch of wins together, UCLA found itself with a potential opportunity to share the Pac-12 regular season championship. Now, a loss against USC in the regular season finale left UCLA with the number two seed in the Pac-12 tournament, which of course was canceled because of COVID-19. But the Bruins ended up finishing one game out of first place in the Pac-12 behind Oregon, which of course with Peyton Pritchard, an incredibly talented team that was going to be expected to potentially make a splash in March. But when you're talking about teams like Arizona State, Arizona, Colorado, which spent a good portion of the season ranked, not to mention a USC team that started to string wins together towards February in conference play, UCLA turned out to be a pretty good team last year. And having a lot of recruiting success is going to help Cronin continue to make an impact at UCLA, especially after he took that job after 9 consecutive NCAA tournament appearances with Cincinnati. Earlier this week, top 25 prospect for the 2021 recruiting class, Peyton Watson, committed to UCLA, which gives the Bruins the top-ranked player from the state of California for the first time since 2018, which doesn't sound like that long, but when you're UCLA, the top prospect from California should almost always be coming to you. You're better than Cal, you're better than Stanford, you're better than those other California schools out there, and you should be above everyone else in the Pac-12. That's the expectation. Arizona State's going to be good. Arizona's obviously going to be very good some years. And Oregon, of course, has done some really good things in recent history. And Dana Altman's a fantastic coach. But the expectation for UCLA is that you should be like Kentucky in the SEC. You should rule the conference. And Watson acknowledged that being able to stay home where his parents can see him play was very good for him. He is a 6'7" shooting guard and is the number 25 recruit in the ESPN 100 for the class of 2021. He averaged 23.5 points, 10 rebounds, and 4 assists last season in high school. And he still has another year of high school basketball before he starts playing in college, and was being sought after by Gonzaga, Washington, Arizona, mainly a lot of really high-profile schools on the West Coast. And now he's the second top 100 commitment for the 2021 class, along with four-star shooting guard Will McClendon. So it's looking like a really good recruiting class for UCLA. And also former Kentucky player Johnny Juzang was a former top 30 recruit. He has received a waiver to play immediately next season for UCLA after transferring there. Juzang, as Tennessee fans will remember, had a really good outing when the Wildcats met the Vols earlier this season, the first time around, I should say, when Kentucky came to Thompson Bowling Arena. So it's a really good-looking team right now, and when Watson is expected to get to campus, there's really only one senior that will be expected on that team. There's no high-profile guys expected to leave early for the draft after next season unless somebody has a breakout year. UCLA is looking like that power program that could be coming back to prominence, especially with Peyton Pritchard leaving Oregon. Is there really a team in the Pac-12 that can just emerge and start to take over the league? Arizona was kind of disappointing last year and is expected to lose its three best players. You had this crop of three great freshmen and things just didn't go all that well. Arizona State is always going to be competitive. Going to Tempe is a tough place to play. Can USC start to make some inroads into being better within the conference? There's just a lot of question marks around the league. It's kind of like the SEC. There are a lot of really good teams, but this past season, there didn't look like there was a single championship caliber team except for maybe Oregon. And that would have been a stretch. You would have been talking about having to pull some upsets as being a lower seed. Oregon was 24-7 last year. They're a ranked team, but are you really going to take Oregon to, were you really going to take them to go up against the best teams in college basketball last year consistently and go on a run to win six games to win the NCAA tournament? No, you just weren't. So UCLA, seeing an opportunity with the talent that Oregon's losing and seeing how everybody else was kind of stuck in the mud this past season, UCLA could come back and start to really prove that Mick Cronin is the guy and can start to string some high-quality wins together. Now, consistency is going to be key. You have to avoid those non-conference losses to Hofstra and Cal State Fullerton. You have to avoid the conference losses to Washington State. But you find a way to beat Arizona and beat Colorado consistently. You be a little bit more competitive with Oregon. UCLA could do some really good things in the future while Mick Cronin is there. It's been a lot of fun doing the podcast today. I appreciate you checking it out. Again, you can follow me on Twitter at Joel Silverberg. Follow the radio station at Sports Radio WNML. And please rate, review, and subscribe to the Behind the Arc podcast on Apple Podcasts. I really appreciate you taking the time to listen. It's the Behind the Arc podcast. We'll do it again next week right here on the Sports Animal.
Behind the Arc with Joel Silverberg on the Sports Animal.